Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Coors Light presents Heavy Montreal, July 28th and 29th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau, featuring Avenged Sevenfold, Rob Zombie, and Marilyn Manson. A weekend of hard rock and metal with Gojira, Emperor, Under Oath, Hollywood Undead, and many more. Festival passes are on sale now. See the full lineup at HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Evenco.
Guys, we got a great show for you today. Guitarist Tony Higby, vocalist James Rivera, and vocalist Kyle Thomas will all join me on this episode. It's an epic episode with lots of great music. I just want to say that on Talking Metal, it doesn't really matter what sports team you like, where you live, who you voted for, what religion or God you pray to, or what, or lack of, like myself. We put all that bullshit aside as we converge here on the Talking Metal podcast. All of it stays outside. All the freaking hatred I see on Twitter and Facebook, sometimes among my fellow listeners, talking about the politics or this sports bullshit or religion. I put all that bullshit aside, and let's all be heavy metal brothers and sisters. I know there aren't many of you. It's a small club, the sisters. But let's just be a family here and put all that bullshit aside for this episode and every episode of Talking Metal. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Doesn't get any better than that, folks. Iron Maiden recently pulled out the cassette of that album and posted a picture on our Instagram, the Talking Metal Instagram page, of it next to a Trooper beer, which I don't know if you guys noticed, they kind of redesigned the artwork. They tweaked it a little bit on the Trooper beer. So, yeah, check out our Instagram. I really enjoy posting pictures on Instagram. I have two accounts, the Talking Metal Instagram account, which is a public account. Please follow me there. And then I have one for my family and stuff, which I generally, unless I know you personally, or I should say, unless you know me personally, I don't really suggest following the family account unless you want to see pictures of my kids, because that's pretty much all I post up there. Occasionally, there'll be a picture of me or my dog, or very rarely Emily. You know, if she approves a picture that I can put up there, one will get up there. But yeah, anyways, follow me definitely, guys, on the Talking Metal Instagram account. We have some great guests on this episode. Tony Higbee, who plays with Tom Kiefer and Damon Johnson, also the East Side Gamblers, will join me, followed by James Rivera, the great vocalist of course, Hellstar. And we're going to close out the episode with Kyle Thomas, who you guys probably know from Exhorter, and he also is in Trouble, the great, great sludge stoner metal band, doom metal band, if you will. So we're going to be all over the map musically here. We're going to start things off with some music by the East Side Gamblers, some great hard rockin' stuff. I just kind of discovered this band recently after talking with Tony down at the M3 Festival. Again, Tony Higbee, the guitar player, who plays with one of my good friends, Damon Johnson. He plays with Damon's band. He also plays with Tom Kiefer's band. And he's got his great band of his own, the East Side Gamblers. And I'm totally excited because he's you'll hear him talk about it. He's in the studio with the East Side Gamblers, and they're working on some new stuff, and I cannot wait to hear it. So, yeah, on that note, let's get into this interview with Tony Higbee, recorded at the M3 Festival before he went on stage with Tom Kiefer. And, yeah, we'll start that off with Backdoor Man by the East Side Gamblers. Go buy this on iTunes, listen to it on Spotify. It's Tony Higbee's band, and then we'll hear from Tony Higbee. It's an interview Mitch LaFon and myself recorded with Tony at the great M3 Festival this year, which if you haven't been to M3, you got to go next year. It's on. It's happening next year. Wow, I can't wait. Anyways, I'm losing my train of thought here. Let's East Side Gamblers, little music, followed by Tony Higbee, an interview that Mitch and Mark conducted at M3. Here we go.
You alone for the last time, and you're started anymore. Let me just do it.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal and Talking Rock, along with Mitch LaFon of Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. And we are here with Tony Higbee of Tom Kiefer's band and Damon Johnson's band. Tony, thanks for sitting down with us for a few minutes.
Thanks for wanting me to sit down with you for a few minutes. I appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. And I know Emily interviewed you last year, so it's great to catch up with you again this year. I know you're playing with Tom later, and I want to talk to you about that, but let's start off with the significance of the M3 Festival. This is his 10th year.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you played the festival?
Man, I gotta think. I think this is number four.
Four, and it's with Tom?
With Tom every time,
With Tom every time.
So the first year we did it, we did the second stage in the woods. And I remember it was right before, we were the headline in the second stage, it was right before Europe went on the main stage.
Right.
And then I know we did it as direct support, I want to say to Tesla 2 years ago.
Okay.
And then Rat last year.
Right, yeah.
And now we're headlining tonight this year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you have a chance to play with Damon Johnson of Black Star Riders.
Yeah.
You did Birmingham tonight.
Yep.
Talk to me about working with Damon, because he's one of my favorite.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite too.
Yeah.
Damon is... He's just good people.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of have a rule at this point in my life. I won't, even if I love the music, I won't. There's two things I got to really love.
Right.
And then one thing that if it's good enough, it's fine. The money's good enough. Not like, I don't need to get rich, but as long as it's fair.
Right. You can pay the bill.
That's fine.
Right.
But the main thing for me is number one, the music, and number two, the hang. I don't want to play with an asshole, you know? And Damon's a great guy. Wonderful human being, amazing guitar player, and he's got a cool voice. Like, I don't think he gives himself enough credit for what a cool singer he is, but he's got a cool voice. And as a guitar player, it's been really healthy for me because I do what I do in my own band, the East Side Gamblers.
Right.
And then I play with Tom, and we have a thing, but Damon comes from a little different direction, and he's a monster guitar player, and it pushes me a little bit, you know? And so it's great to get up there, and especially with him, you know, in his solo band, it's kind of covering a broad spectrum of all the stuff that he's done. So there's lots of Brother Cain, which is like kind of a cool, there's a lot of textures going on there, a lot of stuff going on. You know, even some of his smaller projects like
Whiskey Flats.
Slave to the System. And
Whiskey Falls.
We don't do any Whiskey Falls in that band.
You should.
Actually, our drummer, Jared, was in Whiskey Falls with Damon.
Right.
Yeah, Tom's drummer too, same guy. And then Slave to the System, Red Halo, I think was the name of another EP that he did, because I know we do Amphetamine on Birmingham tonight, and that's from that. And then of course the Thin Lizzy stuff, the Alice Cooper stuff, the Black Star Riders stuff. I mean, there's just so much to draw on. It's just a lot of fun, you know. And Damon's just, he's like I say, he's just a legit dude. He's a great guy.
He really is. Now you mentioned your own band. Is that, talk to me about the plans for that. Is there an album coming out? Are you going to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We've actually got two EPs on iTunes right now. The East Side Gamblers self-titled first one. And the second one is called All In. We have a new one done called The Big Machine. We produced the first two ourselves. The new one, Big Machine, we actually did with Nick Raskulinek producing, and I don't know if you're familiar with Nick.
Oh, of course.
The Rush's producer, and of course, Black Star.
Yeah, he did the last couple Black Star. Yes. He did the last three
Heavy
Rush
Fire,
records.
He did Killer Instinct.
Yep.
And then the Rush stuff.
Like the last three Rush albums.
Yeah.
He did a couple
of Ghost, I think, too.
Yeah, he did Ghost. He did a couple of Deftones records. He did a couple of Foo Fighters records. Yes. He's doing the new Hailstorm record.
He's like
right
the new Fireball Ministry.
Yeah, and honestly, I can't afford Nick. You know, we paid him what we could, and we were his passion project that he shoehorned in between sessions with Korn and Alice in Chains. So, and I'm really proud that it turned out great. And, you know, I'm really proud of those first two EPs too, but Nick, he pushed me and made us take it up another notch, you know. But if you haven't heard us before, if you like that 70s kind of two guitar AC/DC meets UFO meets, you know, just big loud hard rock band. You know, guitar harmonies here and there and stuff like that. That's
awesome.
That's kind of the speed of it.
Yeah. Awesome. And I know we all want to get out to see Faster Pussycat play, but
you're good.
Real quick, what's you're doing this big M3 gig tonight with Tom Kiefer.
Yep.
What else is on the agenda for you and Tom?
Well, I mean, this is year six, which when I took this gig, I legitimately thought Be 6 to 9 months. Go do a few runs, support a solo record, and then, you know, Cinderella probably go back and start doing shows again.
Right.
And now we're on year six.
Wow.
We've been threatening to make a new record for a while. I think the threats are going to become a reality end of this year. We'll probably start working on it.
Okay.
We're going to tour through the summer into the fall is what I'm hearing. And, you know, there's some song ideas simmering on his end. I've got a few on my end. I'm sure
you guys are writing together.
Not together yet. We're kind of doing our own things. I've got like some, you know, when I write, I tend to write, and a lot of times I'll hear where it should go. And as far as projects, you know, and if I write for the Gamblers, it's a little different stylistically. I sing a little differently than Tom, you know, when it's me singing lead. But every once in a while I'll write something and I'll hear it and just go, man, that's would totally fit Kiefer.
Right.
You know, and so I've got some ideas kind of set aside like that. I don't want to develop anything too much because I want to collaborate with him and, you know, and have him put his stamp on it, you know. So, but yeah, we'll see, you know. Maybe I get 5 songs on the record. Maybe I get 0. Maybe I get 1 or 2. I don't know.
Right.
But whatever it's, you know, I mean, it says Tom Kiefer on the marquee, but, you know, he always makes it a point to make us all feel and know that it's a band. And even though he's the band leader, clearly, you know, he really goes out of his way to make everybody feel included and listen to everybody's ideas and thoughts and, you know, and work on stuff together. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, as always, thanks for joining us on Talking Metal and Talking
anytime,
Rock. And have
anytime.
A great set tonight. Really can't wait. You guys were great last year. Can't wait to see you again tonight.
I am looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome. So the set this year is probably my favorite set we've played so far.
Oh, cool.
It's just, I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, we do a full set. It's 90, and we got to trim a couple because of the festival tonight, just a couple tunes. But headlining affords us the ability to be able to play, you know, a lot longer. But, you know, a full set for us is 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like it right now.
Right.
Like, and I always feel like that's the mark of a good set, you know. When the guy who's been playing it all year goes, really, we're done already?
Wow,
you know?
Yeah.
So,
awesome.
But it's a cool set. And there's songs in there that we've never got to play that I'm a big fan of that I'm like, yes.
Cool.
I'm so glad this is in the set. Plus, like, and this year's the 30th anniversary of Long Cold Winter.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah. Oh. So we're going a little deeper on that this year.
Good.
I think we're playing like half of that record or maybe even a little more in the set. So
well, that's good news.
That album has hits.
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate you having me.
This is one I don't ever play, but we're going to play it for you guys right now. This is called Slave to the System.
song Slave to the System off the Damon Johnson live album Birmingham Tonight featuring Tony Higbee on guitar. It's a great live record. I know I've spoken about it on some of the other Talking Metal and Talking Rock episodes. I really am enjoying that record. Love it. I think it came out late last year. I didn't get it until this year, though, but it's great. And I did want to mention that Damon, a good friend of the show, a good friend of mine who plays with Black Star Riders, he did announce he is doing a Pledge Music campaign. So let's all go and support Damon there. It is a campaign for his next record, Memories of an Uprising. Again, Damon Johnson, who we just heard there rocking the song Slave to the System with Tony Higbee. Yeah, so Damon is doing this Pledge Music campaign. So check it out and support Damon's next record. And also be on the lookout for the next record by the East Side Gamblers. It sounds like it's going to be a great one. And hopefully Tony will come back and talk with us once it's released. All right, let's remind you guys that I restocked the Talking Metal t-shirts. And of course, now that I did that, they are not selling quite as good as they had been on the first order. But we are restocked, all sizes, small through 3XLs. Let me know what you need. $20, hit me up on PayPal. The PayPal account is of course my email, my personal email, which is Striegelmark, Striegelmark, @gmail.com. Send me $20 and give me your shirt size and your address, and we'll get one out to you. That is a great way to support the show. I don't make a lot of money off the t-shirts because, you know, it wasn't like I was ordering 2,000 t-shirts. It was more like, you know, 50 at a time. But what happens is you guys wear it out at the shows. People say, hey, what's Talking Metal? You say, hey, it's a great podcast. You're out there promoting what I do, and I really thank you for that. So let's buy some t-shirts. I would love to send you out some t-shirts. $20, hit me up on PayPal. Just do it as a donation so we don't have to deal with like selling goods and taxes and all that bullshit. All right, and also support us on Patreon. Really kind of bummed. You know, I launched this Patreon page and was hoping we would really get close to our goal, and we're nowhere near being close. But having said that, you know, I still have hope. You guys are going to join me there. We got 17 great Patreons there supporting what we do here on Talking Metal, the podcast. There is the Talking Metal YouTube page where I just recently posted my Queensryche interview, which my friend Mike Peel edited, and of course he didn't do it for free, you know, so there's costs involved. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. Finances are grim on my part here, so anything you can do to support me on Patreon and keep this thing alive, because honestly, some days I wonder how much longer we can really keep this going. So definitely show some love to what we do with Talking Metal and Talking Rock by going to Patreon. You can also write a review for us on iTunes. 5-star reviews are preferred. Also on the Patreon note, if you do a $5 a month pledge or donation, I will send you out a t-shirt. Just send me an email and let me know that you're doing that. And I'll probably see it because I go to Patreon all the time. But, you know, we'll connect and I'll get you out a t-shirt, okay? $5 a month or more gets you a Talking Metal t-shirt with a Patreon pledge. All righty. And, of course, we love the 5-star reviews on iTunes. We love you guys using the Amazon links, which are up on talkingrock.net and talkingmetal.com. Those Amazon links are good for anybody in the U.S., Canada, or the U.K. So, yeah, please use our Amazon links. And without further ado, this is a song called Guardian of the Sea by Shadow Keep. After this song, we will hear from James Rivera. And coincidentally, this is James on vocals on this one. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line for the first time here on the podcast, we have the great vocalist James Rivera. James, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you, man?
I'm excellent. It's really great to talk with you because, as always, you have so much stuff going on, which has just been a theme of yours through the years. I've always admired how many things you're able to balance at once and just your hardworking ethic. It's really impressive.
Well, I think it's because I don't know anything else to do. So
right.
I better be good at what I'm doing there. Yeah, exactly.
Well, of course, a lot of us know you from Hellstar, but let's start off talking about Shadowkeep, which is a band that's been around a while. There was a, I guess, 8 to 10 year hiatus where they weren't really quite as visible, but they're back with their new album. It's their first album in over 10 years. It's a self-titled album, and this time you are in the fold with them. How did this all come about?
Well, you know, what happened is that Nikki and Chris, I've known for over almost 10 years now, and they have been very, very dedicated, very, very major loving Hellstar fan, James Rivera fans altogether for many years.
Right.
And
right.
So I've met them several times that just come into our shows, you know. And the bass player, Stoney, is also a Texan. He lives in Austin, and I know him very well. And so what happened is that, I guess for the last 10 years, they've been working on this record, and they were auditioning singers left and right, and they just couldn't find what they were looking for. And what they were looking for was not what they were, what, you know, everybody thought they would be looking for, which, you know, they primarily have been almost a complete prog metal band in the past. And of course the singers they've had before, which, and no offense, it's nothing derogatory, but that's just my term, you know, in a funny cartoon way, I call them the canary singers. So they're basically, you know, right. The Jeff Tates and the
right.
Midnights and yeah. So, because they do remind me of birds at the end of the day, you know, so,
right.
So it's kind of, you know, that's kind of what their style was. But I think that what happened is they saw that maybe that was putting them in a box, and really their true hearts are, yeah, they're into that stuff too, but they're really into, I mean, you know, who doesn't love Judas Priest, and who doesn't love Iron Maiden, who doesn't love Dio, who doesn't love, you know, and of course them being big Hellstar admirers. So I think in their hearts, what they were doing was they were just trying to change direction. So when they started auditioning people, they started getting a bunch of canaries, and they're going, well, we're actually looking for a vulture.
Right.
So it didn't work out. And so they were like, well, and so people would be like, well, you know, what are you looking for? We're going, well, we're kind of looking for a James Rivera. If we could get one of those, we'd be happy.
Yeah.
And so Stoney just brought it up at a gig in Austin. We were all hanging out. Just, you know, I was going to see his Judas Priest tribute band, and he came up to me, and he's like, dude, what would you think about singing in Shadowkeep, man? We're looking for James Rivera, and here you are. And I mean, I just knew it was, you got too much on your plate. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, I don't have anything going on. I said, really? Really? And he was like, really? Yeah, you know, this is what we're looking, you know, this is the direction we want to go. And I said, well, I love, you know, Nikki and Chris. And I said, well, you know, I'd like to hear the material just to be sure, you know, I mean. So when he told them, they got so excited. So they started sending me stuff. And sure enough, as soon as I started listening to it, I said, I can hear my voice all over this stuff. And that's how it happens. And so we were all skeptical at first because you're always going to have the haters and this and that. But so far, everybody has loved the new album and saying that, you know what, it's probably the best thing they've ever done. And it, you know, what I did to it, it fits. And that's the direction we will go from here on out, you know?
Yeah, it does sound really great. And again, we're talking about Shadowkeep, the self-titled album that is out now. It's on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon. You can pick it up at all your favorite music outlets. Let me ask you, as far as the songwriting for this went, now, were they sending you lyrics and melodies, or are you getting just musical tracks and coming up with your own,
everything lyrics? Everything was naked. And
right.
So,
okay.
And ironically, another thing that made Stoney happy was that he was never allowed to write, I guess, according to them and their past two singers, they were very dominant about how they only wanted to write the melodies and the lyrics, blah, blah, blah. And when it comes to me, since day one, me and Mr. Berrigan from Hellstar have always collaborated on the lyrics. So okay. I've always been open to, you know, ideas. So Stoney was bringing that up and I said, dude, send them over. So, you know, with a collaboration of some stuff he sent me, and I wrote the majority of all the lyrics for everything, but I wrote all the melodies myself. So, but yeah, it was, that's kind of how it worked. Everything was done with nothing. And so, of course, now a lot of the melodies and the final, what was put down on tape, well, it's not tape anymore, what's put down on a
hard drive.
I don't even know what the term is now. Yeah, it's put down on hard drive. I know that's weird, huh? A lot of the melodies and a lot of the vocals, I would say, also were a collaboration of me and Mr. Berrigan, because Larry produced the vocals here in Houston, you know. So,
oh, did he? Okay. So, yeah, more Hellstar influence on it. Yeah, very cool.
And more Hellstar influence, right. But, yeah, and but at the same time, when we were listening to the tracks and the stuff I started laying, he goes, you know, bro, I think this calls for pulling out the vigilante card and the distant thunder card and the days when you sang really high and clean. And, you know, we'll keep a lot of the black metal filthy guys that we put in Hellstar as little, you know, hints here and there, because I know you like that stuff. We'll save that for Hellstar. But I think for this one, we need to go more for the, you remember back in the day when you used to warm up to Steve Perry before shows? Think that way.
right.
So, and we did, you know, and that's why it came out the way it did. So it is me, but it's definitely different than Hellstar. And that's the main thing that I wanted to keep on track, is that when I sing for Shadow Keep, they're going to get the James Barra meets Steve Perry meets, you know, my old days, and then when they get Hellstar, they're going to get, you know, James Rivera meets Danny Filth a little bit here and there, and just more aggression, you know, so it keeps it separated.
Right on. And that's very cool. I had no idea that, you know, Larry was also kind of involved in this, in kind of I don't know, behind the scenes way, I guess I would call it, right?
Right, yeah.
Very cool. So, you know, on that last Hellstar record, it was really a theme about vampires throughout the whole record. Is the Shadow Keep record, I was listening to the lyrics, and is there a theme there in your mind? Is this all kind of connected, you know, Guardians of the Sea, the talking about swords, Horse of War? Is there a theme here in your mind that runs throughout the record?
Yeah, basically it's, the theme was more, and it was Chris and Nikki's idea from the get-go. They wanted a mythology theme, so a lot of it is about mythology and you know, just legends, and then one song's about actually Moses, you know, freeing the Jews, and you know, Horse of War is just basically about the days of the knights, you know, and you know, the horse that took them to battle with all the armor on it and stuff, you know. So it does have a big theme, but there is a lot of it is Greek mythology, like, you know, of course, yeah, Guardian of the Sea is about Neptune, and of course Minotaur's right. Minotaur, and you know, so it's a mixture of a lot of things. And then there's actually a song on there about the very first vampire ever recorded, you know, as far as legend has it, you know, and where it all started, and it started in Greek mythology.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's funny, you know. Yeah.
Is that which one is that? Immortal Drifter? Is that what that one is?
That's it. Yeah. Immortal Drifter. So yeah. Yep. I got to throw in my two cents about you know, my passion for vampires and this
right
whole
on.
Thing. So
right
yeah.
On. Cool. Well, and will there be any chance that you're going to do shows with Shadowkeep?
Well, we've already done a little string of shows around a festival in Germany that booked us, and this already happened in late February, early March. We did a few shows in Belgium, Holland, and yeah, that was about it. But they are coming to America in November, and that's because Pure Steel is going to do their Pure Steel Festival in Cleveland the last weekend of October. And then two weekends after that, I'm scheduling some Texas shows, since they're coming to America.
Right.
And we're going to do three shows, probably co-headlining with Nasty Savage. And but that's because there's another festival that's built in San Antonio on November the 10th with Nasty Savage as the headliner and Shadowkeep already on it. So with them coming to Texas, I mean, obviously I've got to do Houston and Dallas, you know, so.
Right on. Very good. Well, that's exciting. And on the Hellstar front, I know you guys had done a lot of shows in 2017. Have there been, what's going on? Have you done shows in 2018 with Hellstar?
Yeah, we just did a couple of shows just last weekend, two nice big ones.
Okay.
We did the NYD M Fest in Milwaukee, the headliner on Friday.
Nice.
Very next day, we flew right back home and did the Hell's Heroes Festival, co-headlining with Sarah Thungel and Midnight. And that was, you know, right here in our hometown. So, but both shows were amazing.
Nice.
And we're kind of leaning on kind of becoming that band that we think that we really just kind of need to stick to doing things like that instead of trying to go out and really do major tours. It's just because of everybody's work schedule. I mean, it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, first of all, work schedules, you know, and maintaining a regular life, mainly for them, not for me. But just the market today, the way things are. I mean, you know, if a band that I think at the level we got to, you know, you kind of stuck doing the weekend warrior thing. You go and do a few shows in this territory, fly home. You know, it's just not in the cards anymore to do that. So, but yeah, I mean, we're slowly but thinking about writing the new record, and we're going to take our time with it and that kind of thing.
Cool. Yeah. So the last record, 2016's Vampiro. So what do you think? 2019 release for a new Hellstar?
Yes. That sounds about realistic. Yes.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Well, looking forward to that. And man, you've just through the years had your hands in so many different things. A couple things I just wanted to touch upon. Phil, to the Talking Metal listener who doesn't know what this is, can you explain a little bit about Sabbath, Judas Sabbath?
Oh, okay. Wow, that's cool. Yeah, funny thing is that what that is my international tribute band. It started off as a separate Black Sabbath tribute and a separate Judas Priest tribute. Oh, God, 2000 or 90, yeah, around there.
Wow.
99.
Okay, going back a ways. Right.
One was called Children of the Grave, and one was called Metal Gods. And then I started doing more shows with it, and then with the two tributes, then I was in Seven Witches, and then all these other things started piling up. And like, as you said, you know, you're impressed with how I can do so many things. But then again, I started going like, okay, wait a minute, I'm not an octopus. This is a little too much. And so I decided to go ahead and combine the two and make it into one act. And so when I did it, I was just like, I was just laying in bed, and I'm like, I'll just call it Sabbath, Judas Sabbath.
Nice.
And so basically that's when it was born. And I started doing a lot of shows in Tampa when I was living there. And of course the people loved it. And then I had the Houston chapter. And then before you know it, because it was getting a lot of attention, I started getting inquiries from different band members from different regions of the U.S. And then the next thing you know, I had a Salt Lake chapter, and then that led to, then I had a Florida chapter, then the Houston chapter, and then I ended up having a Phoenix chapter, and then, you know, then it went to an L.A. chapter.
Now, when you say chapter, what does that mean? Different guys in the band in different towns? What does that mean when you say?
Yes, different chapter, exactly, different bands.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Different players in different areas.
Wow, that's
and so it was a clever way of me doing a bunch of markets with the same act, but not having all the expense of five members flying everywhere, you know. And so that started saturating the country here, and then all of a sudden the Europeans got excited about it, and so I ended up mingling with some young cats that are now older, because we've been together since for 10 years now. And so my very first European chapter was from Slovenia, and they were a band called Metal Steel. So once that happened, they did a lot of shows in Europe everywhere, but because of where they're situated in the country, it started becoming like what it was in America. Like, okay, well, you know, to come to the Netherlands from Slovenia is 12 hours.
Wow.
You know, so it's kind of like, so then that led to creating a German chapter and a Dutch chapter, and then finally in the end a UK chapter. So there, altogether, there's like 10 chapters of SJS right
now.
That's
great.
Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned Seven Witches, and there, I'm in New Jersey, so you know, we all know those guys, Jack Frost, of course, Alan Tecchio,
those
guys. How do you look back on the work that you did with Seven Witches?
You know, to me, it's some of my proudest work too. I mean, I think I think at that point, my vocals were starting to get to their very, very peak of all the elements I've ever done in my life. You know, so I mean, and I think Jack was such a great writer that shit is some best stuff I've done. You know, as far as simplicity and straightforward, more catchiness in the songs that we did. And I mean, Passage to the Other Side will always be a classic, you know, and Year of the Witch as well, you know, but yeah, I mean, it was some, and we did a lot of great touring. We did a lot of good stuff, you know, and I loved coming up to that area. You know, I miss all those guys.
Cool. And you did some work with Malice, which is a band that just has a long, great history. I was a big fan of their early stuff. Any chance that would ever pick back up, or is that kind of, that ship sailed?
Well, unfortunately and sadly, you know, I mean, you know, Mick passed away.
Right. Yep.
And so at the end of the day, when we did that New Breed of Gods, and we wanted to give it a shot, see if we could revive the band, and it was going to be, and again, another situation where it would have been so different from what they were doing. There was only the two original members left. And so now that he's gone, it'll probably never happen again, you know? So it's, yeah.
Right on. And the South Texas Legion, the Texas Metal Legion, we were talking a little bit about that before the interview started here. Can you fill the Talking Metal listeners in on what that's all about?
Yeah, well, what that's all about is, it's about the, and back in the 80s, when we first started out as Hellstars, as a matter of fact, our first show was in San Antonio, there was just this scene that was just out of control. I mean, it was, San Antonio was called the heavy metal capital of the world. Now, different cities will argue about that, but I guess depending on where you lived, and I lived in Texas, so I saw what San Antonio was like, where, you know, when you went to shows there, they were five times bigger than they were in Houston and anywhere else.
Right.
But it seemed to me that what created the San Antonio metal scene was bands like Hellstar, Metal Church, Merciful Fate. They liked that, you know, and then of course they had their own San Antonio Slayer and Carry On, and then Watchtower from Austin. That was a different kind of music, and what it was that music was very intricate and very technical. And so when people classified the Texas metal scene, that's what they're talking about. And it's ironic that, you know, like, they don't even think of Pantera, which was the band that made it the biggest out of Texas for metal, but they're not included in that world for, well, obviously musically that's why, but I mean, so the Texas metal scene, when they talk about, I guess the proper term would be the South Texas metal scene, or the South Texas Metal Legion, if that's what it's talking about, is those bands that erupted that whole scene in San Antonio in the 80s. And so we have all kind of joined forces again. So this Texas Metal Legion now is made up of me and Bob Catlin and Art Varyal, the original guitar players from San Antonio Slayer, Jason McMaster, of course, everybody knows who he is, Watchtower, Dangerous Toys, Mike Solis from Militia, and on and on and on and on, you know, just the guys from Juggernaut, members from Juggernaut. And what we did is we created the heavy metal Lynyrd Skynyrd. And we ended up doing, and what brought it all together was this little museum in San Antonio called the Pop Culture, South Texas Pop Culture Museum.
Right.
And they have a theme every quarter, and the theme for this last quarter was the metal scene. So when you went in there, there was these pictures of all these old metal bands like San Antonio Slayer, Hellstar, all over the walls, and any little thing you could find. And they put together a show and we played. And
wow, that's awesome.
It was one of the biggest shows I've ever played in San Antonio in years.
Really?
I mean, it got to the point where it made news. Now the newspaper on the cover of it, the South Texas Metal thing is like on the cover of the San Antonio Current. And it's blowing up so big now. We just got confirmed for Keep It True. And yeah,
really? That's awesome.
Like, wow, yeah. Where is this going to go?
Nice. Yeah, congratulations. That's fun. So,
it's very something to be proud of, you know, and be like, well, I was part of that. And, you know, the funny story is that Hellstar, although Hellstar is not from San Antonio, and when you think of those bands, they're primarily really thinking more of, you know, what built the San Antonio metal scene. You know, Watchtower was from Austin, but, you know, Austin right. and San Antonio basically an hour apart, so that's kind of the same. Hellstar was, you know, not anywhere near from Austin, but it was just us musically, we fit there. And we were claimed and loved so much by San Antonio, by the time the first record came out, Kerrang! Magazine was talking about, you know, this band from Texas based out of San Antonio, Texas.
Wow.
So we were loved there so much that we were mistaken for a San Antonio band. But when we read it, instead of getting upset, we'll go, we'll take it. We know San Antonio loves us. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
So, everybody thought we were a San Antonio band, but,
great
you
stuff.
Know, that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I had no idea about the museum and stuff. That's very cool. I wish I could have seen that exhibit. Sounds very cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, James, it's been great talking with you, and we encourage all the Talking Metal listeners to seek out the new release by Shadowkeep featuring James Rivera on vocals and, of course, Hellstar. Where's the best place for people to reach Hellstar online? Is it Facebook or the website?
Yeah, just go to the Hellstar Facebook. Is, you know, that's the best place to find out what's going on. And I thought the same for Shadowkeep as well, too, you know. So I guess that's the way everything's going. Matter of fact, South Texas Metal Legion is on Facebook already too, and getting tons of hits and everything. Yeah,
cool. And yeah, man, what a career you've had. I mean, I feel like in this interview we've only scratched the surface. Guys, do yourself a favor and just Google James Rivera, because he's done so much stuff through the years and it's so impressive. Definitely one of the hardest working guys in heavy metal. James Rivera, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, buddy. I really appreciate that. I really do. And you guys out there, keep the faith. And, you know, I don't know how many years some of us that created it are going to be around, but as long as we're around, we're going to keep delivering it. So we're not going anyway anytime soon.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because, I mean, you know, that's a whole nother discussion, but I feel like every year that goes by, we lose some of our heavy metal heroes.
Oh, I know.
And whether it's retirement or even worse, passing on, it's just like, you know, I feel like we're at the end of the era of this great heavy metal movement that, you know, people like you have brought us. So glad to hear you're going to be out there doing it for us for as long as you can. That's great.
You bet, buddy. You bet.
Transparency!
All right. Thank you, James, for joining us here on Talking Metal. James Rivera. Wow, what a mind-blowing career this guy has had. If you don't know James, definitely, like I said, go Google him and just prepare to be blown away by the amount of work this guy has done through the years. James Rivera. Very, very cool that he holds the Seven Witches stuff in such high regard. Of course, their beloved New Jersey band, Jack Frost, Alan Tecchio, two guys I know have been associated with that band, and so is James Rivera. Actually, Jack Frost is kind of the dude behind that whole thing. He's been on every record. Seven Witches, of course. All right, so that song that we heard coming out of the interview was Bloodlust by Hellstar from 2016, featuring James Rivera on vocals. Bloodlust, again, by Hellstar. Go buy that on iTunes. And let's keep it rolling. This is Death in Vain by Exhorter from 1990. Wow, I can't believe it's that long ago. And this will be followed by an interview I conducted with Kyle Thomas of Exhorter and Trouble. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and calling in on the line, we have vocalist Kyle Thomas. Kyle, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, and I wanted to catch up with you because it sounds like, as always, you have a lot of stuff going on. I want to hear what's going on with Trouble, but let's start with Ex-Hoarder. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of movement going on here, some exciting stuff happening. Can you talk to us a little bit about how this new lineup of really this legendary band has materialized?
Oh, well, thank you. It really just kind of happened, I guess, about a year ago, after many, many years of not doing anything following the last breakup, which seems to happen every decade or so,
right.
A reunion and then a dissolving of the band. But this time around, Vinny and I sat down and talked, and it's like, you know, we both realized after having bumped into each other in social situations that how much we really miss each other. I mean, the guy and I are practically brothers. We have known each other since we were teenagers, and sometimes when it comes to family, you love family like no other, and you fight with family like no other. So we've just kind of chalked it up to nothing that happened is irreconcilable. So we began talking about the possibility of working together again, and it just kind of fell into place. And next thing you know, we had an opportunity to sign with All Independent Services Alliance management company, and they've kind of just taken, I think, the pressure of all of the things that we really thought about back in the day. They've taken on that workload for us and just kind of given us an opportunity to focus on what we're supposed to be doing, which is putting together a live ensemble that can deliver the goods and creating new music. And it's really, really made a huge difference. I haven't laughed the way I've laughed the last few months. I haven't laughed like that in a long time.
Nice.
Obviously, it was sorely needed. I guess that was the long version and long path to get to your question, which is about the lineup. We're really excited about our lineup.
Yeah, tell us who's in the band now.
Yeah, we've got some really, really cool people working with us right now. The longest term member right now who's in the new lineup is Jason Vibrooks. We first met Jason in the early mid-90s, kind of right around the time that we were about to break up after the Law tour. And he came down to audition for the spot, and we spent some time with him, really liked him. He played with Heathen back then, and since then he's played on and off with Heathen and Grip Incorporated. So Jason's definitely pro-level guy, quality human being, which is a huge plus. The project that he and Vinny had put together in recent years, it still hasn't been released yet, but it's called Year of the Tyrant. Jason and Vinny and our drummer Sasha Horn, who also played with Forbidden.
Dan Nelson, right?
Forbidden. Yeah, Dan Nelson on vocals. And I don't think Sasha played in Forbidden, but maybe for a minute. Maybe some live shows or pre-prep for an album or something. But he did also play with Jason Heathen. The last piece of the puzzle in that in the new lineup here is Marzi Montazeri. I have a project with Marzi that it's his. It's been his for a long time, called Heaviest Texas, and he asked me to help him finish up the album and start this, you know, as a joint venture with me and him. And he sent me some recordings he'd done with Chris Collier that are just flat out amazing. And we're kind of in the final stages of mixing, of recording And then mixing will start soon on that. But Marzi's a beast. If anyone doesn't know who Marzi is, you're going to soon. He had just recently done an EP with Tim Ripper Owens.
Okay.
That sounds really, really good. And that was kind of just a precursor of what Heaviest Texas is going to be doing. So, yeah, we love our lineup. We played the shows in New York at St. Vitus Bar and one down here right before Mardi Gras. And we just did about a half a week of rehearsals here in New Orleans because we leave Wednesday for a few festivals in Europe. And it's wow. Business as usual. And the calm and the peace in the room with everybody when we're all together is fantastic. And I couldn't ask for more than that.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on that. That sounds like just exciting news to have you guys out there doing it again. And can we expect new music, or is it still kind of too soon to think about that?
You know, we've mostly been focusing at this point on just getting everybody up to snuff with being able to play the material, because if anyone's not familiar, Exhorter is extremely technical music.
Right.
And you know, when a guy at the level of Marzi is pulling his hair out going, you know, what did Vinny write? How could he do this? It says a lot about the makeup of this music. So everyone's worked extremely hard in doing their preparation so that we can get out there and give people who love Exhorter or have yet to experience Exhorter the true experience. It's definitely a young man's game that I'm trying to relearn at 48, because
right.
To get out there and not do it 100% would really kind of be a disservice to anybody who's familiar with it or has not yet experienced it. So I've been in the gym trying to get my cardio up and
cool.
Get my sleep and taking my vitamins. That's about it. That's about all I can do.
Right on. You know, and when you look back, I mean, it's so many years ago at this point, going way back to, I mean, what was it, 1990, the Slaughter in the Vatican record. That was such a revolutionary sound for that time. It kind of took thrash and extreme metal to this new place. How do you look back on that record so many years later?
It's such a story with that album. We formed in 86, and we were all pretty young, and we did the demo for Slaughter in the Vatican was our third demo, and we did that, started it in 87, and completed it in 88, and it was actually supposed to be the album when we went in to do it. We did it in a real studio, and for whatever reason, when we signed with Mean Machine, that eventually collapsed, and then our contract was purchased by Roadrunner. We really wanted the demo because the demo is a more true version of what we were live. And I don't remember exactly all the reasons why. I think it may have had something to do with the fact that they were not happy with the drum tones that we had. There was, for whatever reason, it was decided that we would just re-record the album. So between starting to record it with Mean Machine and it not being sonically right, and then Roadrunner taking over the contract, and we tried to re-record some of it and it turned out not sonically right. And then we ended up, by the time we were done, almost all of the performances had been re-recorded two or three times. So it's really a bizarre album. Even the drums were overdubbed, which is in a musical style such as thrash, in the complexities of the intricate performances and time signatures, it was really a difficult task for Chris to do, but he pulled it off. And I don't know, at the end of the day, the album speaks for itself and stands the test of time, evidently, because it gets hailed as a classic by a lot of people, and we only wish that it could have been more along the lines of what we wanted it to be, but it right. is what it is, and people love it, so we have to it no longer belongs to us anyway. Once it's released, it belongs to the people.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are, instead of pining over what that album should have been, we'll just focus on what's coming next. And I think you did ask me if we're working on new music. We're actually dabbling with that right now, just to see what it turns out to be like. That's not our main focus right now. Our main focus is the dates that we have booked now, and delivering our promises on that. And along the way, we're just kind of letting the chips fall as they may.
Cool. Well, we're excited for whatever you guys have in store, the live gigs, potentially new music. We'd love to hear it. And while I have you here, of course, I wanted to ask you also about Trouble and kind of see what the status is with that band. Is that kind of in hiatus or on hold now while you focus on other things?
Not so much as it just Trouble. It's a slower moving thing than maybe it's the riffs. I don't know.
Right.
But,
right.
We did the album in 2013. We actually have been in the process of writing material the past few years, just slowly but surely. I just don't think that anybody feels a major sense of urgency to do anything fast. We just figured that when the album is completed, it will be ready and it will be great and we'll go out and support it. So yeah, absolutely. Trouble is still a thing. And, I think it's just a laid back timeline comparatively.
Right. Right on. And of course the album you were talking about, 2013's the Distortion Field, and you know, that press really, really received that record well. What was that like recording with this legendary band? How did you approach that record?
You know, I've known the guys for so long because I did some fill-in dates back in the 90s with them, and I've been a fan since I was a teenager, so it was really never a question for me as to whether or not I had to think about whether I wanted to record with them or not and join the band as a permanent member. I care about their songs, not just the ones that I wrote with them. In fact, I kind of prefer to play the older stuff because I'm a fan. You know?
Right, right.
But as people, I love working with them. We're all friends. And the newer stuff that they've given to me to work on is amazing. And when I'm standing on stage with them and Rick and Bruce go to the front of the stage and do their twin guitar leads and harmony, I just get to stand there and sit back and voice to myself in my head during the show, wow, you just don't see that every day.
Right on. Lid, let's talk a little bit about some of the other stuff you've done through the years. Looking back on Floodgate, can you share any memories of that band? Or, you know, I guess how long did that actually go on for you, Floodgate?
We were busy for quite a while, and we treated it like a business. And I worked really hard to make a quality experience for the guys that were in the band with me on that. My brother and I formed that pretty much in our parents' kitchen while we were both kind of, at the time we were in our 20s, and we had both boomeranged back to mom and dad's house between, you know, whatever our things were. So we would sit up and have drinks and write songs, and that's kind of how that album came together. And I guess the interest that I had generated over the years with Exhorter, it was kind of, well, what's Kyle Thomas doing next? And the demos that we had done, Roadrunner had fallen in love with, had some interest from EMI and Pavement and a few other labels. Long story short is we ended up signing with Roadrunner and made an album that we're all extremely proud of. We worked pretty hard to make it. We worked pretty hard to support it. we ended up doing the very last Sepultura tour. We did main support for the Roots tour in Europe.
Wow.
Which, you know, it's amazing. It was arenas every night. You know, you go from doing club tours, to being on your own nightliner, playing to an average of 4,500 people a night. It's definitely an eye-opening experience. And they don't always all love you when you're main support.
Right.
So, you know, you have to fight the good with the bad, but it was great touring with them. They were wonderful people. Sadly, they had so much inner turmoil at the time. We were there the night that that Max left the band. And
really? Wow.
It was very unpleasant because it was the last night of the tour, and it was just awkward. But at the end of the day, they all treated us like family, and I'll never forget that.
So, Kyle, when you look back on your career, you've done so much. What are some of the absolute highlights for you?
The best part is the camaraderie, the brotherhood, the time you share. That is good. Is hard to beat. You know, there are the times when things aren't going so well, and everyone's kind of at each other's throats about it is the hardest part. But I've been all over the world, and I hadn't seen much of anything, because when you're on tour, it's not like a vacation. So you don't get to go do a lot of sightseeing all the time, but getting out there and making new friends and seeing the looks on people's faces when the music is really speaking to them is an absolute joy. It's kind of like when I like to cook. So when I cook, I do it less for myself than I do for the people that I'm feeding. When I see the look on people's faces, if they're enjoying my food, that's worth it to me. And it's kind of the same thing with the craft of songwriting and performing. Once you look out in the crowd and you can see it's really hitting them in the feels, you know, that's what makes it worth it the most to me.
Very cool. And I, you know, just as somebody who covers hard rock and heavy metal music and studies this stuff, I just have to say I have so much respect for people like you, because you're not, I mean, no disrespect, but you're not a household name. You know, you're not probably recognized when you go out to the store, you know, but yet you're out there just for decades upon decades delivering music and art and much more. I mean, I, a guy like you, much more an artist than a rock star, you know, and a lot of respect I have for people like that. So thank you for all your hard work and for all your great art throughout the years.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I wasn't ever a guy that did this for the chicks.
Right.
You know, I started out as a musician at a very young age. I come from a household where art is very important part of daily life, and that's not to say that I don't enjoy some good mindless rock and roll, and Lord knows I wasn't exactly painting Da Vinci classics with some of the horrible lyrical content that we had,
right.
The point is it's all subject to interpretation, and a huge part of music for me is an avenue to vent and relieve the stresses and the pressures of everyday life as well. So there's more to it than just, I don't think I'm ever really setting out to change people's lives necessarily, but you do want, at the end of the day, to offer a product to somebody that gives them, you know, something to have some introspection on. You know, that when people ask me, what do your lyrics mean for this? What does the lyrics in this song mean? My answer is usually, well, what does it mean to you?
Right.
Because what it means to me is going to be completely different than what they mean to you, because you don't live my life. It's less about how it meant coming from me as to, is it making you feel a certain way? Is it helping you? Is it stressing you? What is it? You know?
Yeah, well, it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's like once you release something, it's no longer yours anyways. It more becomes the fans' thing, you know, and which is a very interesting concept, you know.
Yeah, that's the truth. I really don't listen to, I've got people that ask me, hey, you know, remember what you said in this song here, and it's easier for me to remember the old Exhorter songs because it's long-term memory. I was young and it stayed with me. It's more like muscle memory, but some people ask me, you know, hey, on that Alabama Thunderpussy record you did in that song where you said this, I'm like, did I say that in that song? I haven't heard that album in so long because right. I just don't listen to it anymore because I'm not touring with them. I'm not working on it. I not that I've forgotten it, but I don't sit around listening to me all the time. And if I had to get up and do a live show with that band right now, I'd be in big trouble because I just don't remember. I'd have to do some homework.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for your time today, and we wish you the best of luck and looking forward to everything you have coming musically in the future.
Well, thank you, Mark. I do appreciate it. Everybody be on the lookout the next week or so. We're hitting a festival in Portugal on Friday and one in Germany on Saturday. So there's going to be some updated live shots, live videos, and probably videos of us acting like idiots or boring old men, whatever way you want.
Right. And where's the best place people can check you guys out online?
Well, we do have www.exhorter.com, which is our official site. We have official merch stores there for the States and for Europe. And also we have an Exhorter page. There's an Instagram page, which I don't mess with the Twitter and Instagram stuff. I'm an old man, so
right.
I stick with Facebook like most old people do. Each guy, or at least a few of us, have our own artist pages. So just go check out, go search Exhorter on Facebook if that's where you're at, and you'll find some kind of action there.
Okay, cool. And we'll have those links up in today's show notes, guys, on talkingmetal.com and talkingrock.net. Kyle, thank you again for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you, Talking Metal.
Same as it
Dahlia Conspiracy by Trouble. That's from 2013. Thank you to all our guests, Tony Higbee, James Rivera, and Kyle Thomas. And thank you guys for supporting us. Yeah, please come join me on the Patreon page. I really, really need your support there. Okay, guys? And stay metal. Keep it loud. That's it.